The caveman. Historically true?
Yes.
An archetype for backwards, primitive, and oftentimes comedic living? Yes as well. Whenever we reference the caveman, we are doing so as a means to contrast the days of yesteryear with the days of now. For the caveman lived in caves. It would have been a life of darkness and difficulty. All ideas around forward thinking would have likely been absent. Survival was the top priority. Not much else. Which is why a modern-day take on the days of the caveman would make for a fun story. Enter 2014's The Croods by DreamWorks Pictures. A cartoon, yes, but one that's packed full of interesting characters and themes that contrast our modern thinking with the thinking of a world long since past its time. And what better theme to explore than the burden of parenting? A vocation that has had many voices speak into what it should look like, what it ought to be, and what it continues to be in society. Well, depending on what ideology you cling to, of course. This is J.C. Alfelto for The Writer's Lens, and this episode is titled The Croods and the Burden of Parenting. Welcome back to The Writer's Lens. I'm your host, J.C. Alfelto. And in case you missed it last week, I had my sort of rebirth episode, resurrection episode, coming back onto the airwaves for my podcast, The Writer's Lens. So thanks for sticking it out for that year where I was on my basically a sabbatical of sorts. My return episode, which covered the character of Mario from the Super Mario Brothers franchise. So if you did not check that out yet, please go back next week and give it a good listen, help the algorithms, help the internets find my voice and this podcast if you like what you're listening to, and also be sure to subscribe. This is my second return episode, and as I shared in my last one, how my last year has been totally crazy. My wife and I welcomed our fourth child into the mix of our family, who happens to be an adoptive child from India. And I figured I was going to do an episode on parenting eventually because I became a parent for the fourth time this year in 2023. And yes, it's no different than other three, but it's a little bit different, you know, being that my wife and I didn't do it the natural way. We actually went and found a child, or rather got matched with a child, almost a year and a half ago before we even got to go and get her. So it's really exciting. I'm not going to get too deep in the weeds on it because, again, it's probably worthy of a long form discussion, if nothing else. But maybe I'll do an episode on that someday. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But anywho, today, my topic is on parenting and what it looks like, or what is it supposed to look like? There's a lot of narratives around parenting, and there's a lot of movies out there that feature parents in them. If you've watched Disney over the years, there's sort of this theme where parents are either single parents or one of them dies. That's a pretty common theme in Disney, which might be sort of a subtle message that the parent needs to die so Disney can raise your children. I'm just saying that. I'm just putting it out there. But anyway, at any rate, here in the West, you have about three different ways of looking at this, or rather three different ways I can point out. There's sort of the old school methods of parenting, which involve spanking and a bit stricter disciplines. Then there's the timeouts only approach, where you talk through things with your child, put them in timeouts, keep them from enjoying other things, let them know they're missing out, where their siblings get to have all the fun. And then there's also the third one, which is the non-parenting approach, where parents really don't give their children any boundaries at all. They pretty much say, you'll figure it out. As you get older, or rather it's the you'll figure it out method. We're just here to give you shelter and food basically, and bring you back into the fold every now and again and put a roof over your head. So those are kind of the three that I see, me being a parent now, and even as I was growing up, I think there was probably more of the number one option, which was the old school parenting, where there's spanking and there's very strict disciplines against kids. And as I've gotten older, and more recent years, I see less and less people spanking kids, and not that I see it physically, but just hearing about it in favor of doing timeouts. There's numerous surveys I think you could find online that speak to how spanking has actually decreased. One such that I found recently was from the University of Minnesota. They had stated that the rate of parents who had been surveyed, who spanked their children, dropped from 50% to 35%, in about a 25-year period. And in other studies, they also had referenced that you'll still see men more likely to spank their children than women, which is usually, you know, pretty common across, you know, any ethnic group. It's usually 52% versus 36, and 48% versus 38. So, you know, there is a reality that, you know, in a lot of ways, men tend to be more of the disciplinarian type when it comes to a physical sense. You know, there's that old saying, "Wait till your dad gets home." There still is some truth to that in terms of, you know, what we see with parenting. But in that same study, there were some links that supported the idea of what's known as corporal punishment, which is detrimental to children in the long term. And corporal punishment is more of a term around the idea that you can't physically touch your child when you're disciplining them. Or rather, that's what that would be, essentially, corporal punishment. And I have some thoughts on this trend. Also, you know, this interpretation of what corporal punishment is. Because by definition, it is the idea that you're using a cane, a stick, or a rod to imbue some sort of pain on someone as punishment for some sort of wrongdoing. And I will say that is the incorrect way to look at, you know, any kind of way of spanking a child who gets out of hand, because, you know, I will say, and again, we're kind of just jumping into it here, you know, first of all, you know, spanking is never really meant to be done out of anger. You know, spanking is never meant to be something that's done out of anger. Spanking is meant to give a child the understanding that something could have gone horribly wrong had they not been listening. You know, it could be used for this, you know, deliberate disobedience, not just ignorance. You know, if a child is certainly in danger, they need to be disciplined. You know, and second of all, you know, using anything else, you know, such as a cane or some kind of belt or whip, you know, you've heard those phrases, you know, it seems to be unnecessary, because giving a person a license or a guardian license to pick up an object and hit your kid just because it's a punishment is obviously a very wrong thing. You know, and like I said, it just goes back to number one, to be doing it out of anger is never a situation a parent should ever be in. You look, I got four little ones. I get angry with them. I get frustrated with them. It happens, okay? It happens. But to think that, you know, you're going to, you know, pick up the nearest thing that could possibly injure them and hit them with it, of course, is wrong. And, you know, as a parent, you got to be cognizant of that, especially if you're someone who has a history of anger. But also, you know, third of all, for the sake of this discussion, there will come a time when reasoning and talking through things are going to be more applicable as your child gets older. But really expecting a two-year-old to know the complexities of certain dangers is really unreasonable. You know, it's foolish on the part of the parent to think that your two-year-old somehow has, you know, innate knowledge that you don't have, or rather their instincts are better than yours. You know, there's a lot of trends on social media where you see parents kind of bragging about, you know, their kids are sort of advanced, you know, for 3, 4, 5 years old. That's a load of crap. Okay. I know a lot of 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds from being around my kids and being around other kids in our area. And mostly kids that are under that age are pretty well a lot the same. You know, they're looking for guidance. They're looking for security. They don't know much about the world. They need to know what's wrong, what's right. And they can't really innately figure anything out. I mean, they know when they're hungry and they know when they're, you know, when their tummy hurts, they know when they feel sick, and they know what makes them feel good, whether it's running around the house or whether it's, you know, playing in a puddle or, you know, a video game or whatever it is. They can tell you that. They know that much. But their sense of morality or their sense of self is very limited. It's extremely limited. So all that being said, children need boundaries, right? You know, children need boundaries. They thrive on boundaries. And they need them because they have to learn that others around them actually know better than they do, namely their parents. If they're fortunate enough to have both parents in the picture, if mom and dad are both in the picture, then, you know, that helps things tremendously. But, you know, you don't make yourself simply into a good parent by providing shelter and food. There's a lot more to it than that. Which brings me, after that long-winded intro, talking about parenting and spanking and boundaries and everything else, case in point, The Croods. Okay, this movie from 2014, which now is feeling ancient to me because it was almost 10 years ago. The Croods, in case you don't know what it is, on its face, is just another fun animated comedy. It's a film about some cave people, some cavemen, led by an individual by the name of Grug, who is voiced by Nicolas Cage. Excuse me. And there's this really interesting thing in it where there's a lot of parenting lessons that you find in this film, because Grug has a daughter named Eep, who is his eldest child. He also has two other kids, Thunk, who's the middle son, who's a bit of a lunkhead, and Sandy, who is their youngest daughter, who really can't speak but acts like an animal. That's part of the gig, the funny thing about it. But Grug is the leader of the family, along with Ugga. Ugga is his wife. And then his mother-in-law lives with them, which is also another funny sticking point to the film. And they're just trying to survive. You know, they're trying to survive in a world that is very harsh and dangerous. And Grug is their leader. Okay, he's the patriarch of the family, if you will, and he's responsible for keeping his whole family safe. So this is the premise of the Croods, and you know, he's trying to keep them safe, follow all the rules. You know, you can't go out late at night, you can't do this, you can't do that. And of course, naturally, with a teenage daughter, she doesn't like all those rules. You know, she wants to rebel against him, as most kids will do. They will rebel. And enter into the fray, of course, is the character known as Guy, which that is his name, is Guy. He's a human who lost his parents early on. He's been living on his own, and he's voiced by Ryan Reynolds. And he comes into the picture later on and becomes a bit of a love interest for Eep, who, of course, is questioning her father and whether or not he's able to actually provide for the family. And this guy comes along, and literally named Guy, and he has all the answers. Okay, he has a way to get them out of where they're at, where they're living in caves, and he wants to take them to quote-unquote tomorrow. And Grug is very much against this. Grug is the stereotypical guy that doesn't change, you know, or doesn't think he can ever change. You know, he learned from his dad, or he learned from his, you know, his mom or parents, this is the way to do things. And whether or not it's the right way to do things is something maybe he's never really questioned before. You know, he's doing it because he learned it from someone else, and through that pattern, he was able to live. He was able to survive through it. And a common thing that you see with a lot of young parents, that you see with a lot of young people who become parents for the first time, is they often adopt the rituals and the ideas of their parents. You know, even if their parents weren't that great, even if their parents were a bit sluggish or didn't discipline as much or whatever it is, I've often heard this phrase, you know, well, when I was young, my dad, you know, threatened me with a belt, and, you know, my kid, you know, is going to get the same thing. And you always kind of go, well, is that such a good idea? That's a very similar story for a lot of people as they get older and they become parents, as they immediately begin to think about what their upbringing was like. You know, what kind of boundaries did mom or dad give me? Was I allowed to watch TV on Saturday mornings? Was I allowed to go out late at night on Fridays and Saturdays as I got older? You know, how did I deal with the situation when I was hurt, or you know, if I asked for extra food, or if I wanted to, you know, go over to this person's house, like what age was that appropriate to do so? And it becomes further complicated, as you can imagine, when you have a spouse, because the two of you have to figure out how to be on the same team. You have to figure out how the two of you are going to parent this new person that you've created together, or in our case with our fourth daughter that we've decided to love together and bring into our home. You have to be in agreement on this. You have to figure out what those things are to effectively parent. And it's really, it's very interesting to me. And I will brag on my own situation with my wife, is that, you know, we tend to be on the same page on a lot of things, as far as, you know, if a child is getting a little bit out of line, or if we feel like a new boundary has to be set, or we need to talk with a child, or, you know, we kind of have to back each other up. One rule we've had is that we don't speak over each other when it comes to giving direction to the kids. You know, if mom says something first and then, you know, they come to me and ask dad, you know, I make sure that I back my wife's play, excuse me, or the other way around. You know, if they come to me first and then they try to go to mom to get a different answer, you know, she'll back my play on something. And granted, if it's something really out there, then we'll talk about it. But this is a huge, huge, huge thing, because as you become parents, and you know, again, if you do become a parent, or if you're being parented currently and you're listening to this, kids pick up on whether or not their parents are on the same page. Kids will pick up on this almost right away. They will find out that because they're always poking and prodding their parents to see what they can get away with and see what they can do. That is the MO of every child, okay? I don't care what ethnicity they are. I don't care what race they belong to. That is the MO of every single child on the planet. It's been that way since the dawn of time. I can tell you that right now. My wife and I went halfway around the world to find a little girl, and we brought her home. And guess what? She does the exact same things to push our buttons that our three biological kids did here in the United States. Shocking, isn't it? It's just a shocking revelation to have that a child halfway around the world is going to behave the same as your children did when they were two. Again, if you can see my surprise face, I'm sure you can picture it. But this is the difficult thing, again, about parenting, is that everyone will do it a little bit differently, but coming to the realization that there is a burden upon you when you do become a parent, that you have to figure out not only how to move on your feet and be quick and nimble, but also how to adapt and to change. And one of the struggles in this movie, The Croods, and again, I highly recommend this movie for anybody who's a new parent, or just in general, if you're someone that's interested in watching a pretty funny movie that's about 10 years old now, even though it's a cartoon, I still recommend it to people all the time, because I happen to think it's pretty funny, but it's also got some really good lessons in it. The Croods does a great job of this. It creates a tension between the father and the daughter, which is very natural, happens all the time, and further expounds upon it with the idea that Grug is a caveman and that he can't change and that he is incapable of changing. He's incapable of seeing things from his daughter's point of view. He's incapable of seeing things from his wife's point of view, or, you know, understanding why his kids might be rebelling against him or why they might want to do things differently. And it's such a great, obvious trope to do that through the eyes of a caveman, because again, I'm not saying that fathers are cavemen or that mothers are cavewomen or anything like that, but there are many times that we are going to be required of us as parents or whatnot to really try and understand, you know, why is our child acting this way? Or why is our child doing the things that they're doing? Because they don't know what they're doing. I mean, they have no clue why they're doing what they're doing. They're just acting out, or they're frustrated with something, or they don't know why something does what it does. And as a parent, you have to become the interpreter to the world for them. You have to become that grand interpreter, because they have no other interpreter. All they have is their bodies to test the world with, and their voices as they get them. So as I've said about this kind of stuff, the real burden in parenting is knowing that you are A, responsible for all this stuff, and B, knowing that you could mess it up. You know, the fear, of course, of messing things up. And for a character like Grug in the story of The Croods, he has a real fear of messing that up. And so he follows all the rules, which is to never do anything new. And one of his catchphrases is never not be afraid. So never not be afraid. Make sure that whatever you're doing in life, you're always going to be afraid of everything, so you can fear everything rather than living. And I believe Eep makes the comment towards, you know, kind of the climactic point of the film, when they're choosing whether or not to follow Grug's advice or follow Guy's. Eep makes the comment to her dad. She says, "We weren't living, we were just not dying." And that's a very harsh thing to hear if you're a parent and your kids are basically telling you that, you know, hey, you know, you didn't really help us to live. You really just kept us from dying every day. And I don't want that for me as a dad. I don't want that to be my legacy. You know, I can earnestly say that about my own parents, that they really tried that too when we were kids, that they wanted us to thrive. And I do believe every parent that tries to be a good parent has those intentions for their kids. They want their kids to soar. They want their kids to do well. They want to brag on their kids. It's totally natural. Okay, that's a totally natural thing to want for your children when you're a parent. The reality, of course, is keeping them grounded, but also giving them wings to soar. And this is a tension that you will face for your entire life while you're a parent. I mean, I've only been a parent for 8 years, but I see that already in my children, and how much power I actually have over that at these very vulnerable ages that they are being under the age of 10 still. Because like I said, they still don't really know anything. They just don't know any better about much of anything. And so, you know, it's the responsibility of me and the responsibility of my wife to give them that sort of guidance, just because of the mere fact that if we don't, you know, somebody else will. And in many cases, other people don't have the best interests of your kids. I mean, that's why they are your kids. They're not somebody else's. You should have the best interests of your kids in mind if you are a good parent. Or if you're just, you know, if you're trying to become a better parent, you're going to have your kids' best interests, not some no-name or not some other person with some crazy ideology who thinks that they know what's best for your children. When you're the one who lives with them, you're the one that feeds them, you're the one that's wiped their butts, you're the one that's on the birthday parties, you're the one that's trying to figure out what their passions are, their gifts, their talents, and cultivate those for them. So I say all this, again, I'm not even really talking about the Croods that much in this episode. And maybe it's because, you know, this burden of parenting has felt even greater for me recently because my wife and I are officially even more outnumbered than we were before. But I just want to encourage anyone who's going to become a parent or is worried about becoming a parent that there is no foolproof method for being a great parent. But you do have to show up. I mean, you do have to show up and you do have to take interest. And to me, that's more than half the battle. Because the moment those little eyes and the moment those little mouths and hands start reaching out to you and looking to you and trying to figure out what it is about the world, it's going to fall on you to give them a lot of guidance. And how you handle that and how you realize that there needs to be an umbrella, there needs to be a bit of a cover for these children, you will become a better parent for that. And it's going to be hard, it's going to be difficult. But just in terms of disciplining them for their own good, in terms of, you know, showing them what's right, what's wrong, those are things that even though it's hard for you to imagine doing that, it's definitely worth it. I'll share a quick story again about this burden of parenting, and it's not from the Croods, but it's just from my own life. My eldest son was about 4 years old, I would say. He was about 3 or 4 years old, and he had just gotten his new bed at our house, and he dropped his favorite toy into the crevice between his bed and the wall. And for anybody who was little at one point, you know that that crevice between your bed and the wall is like the Grand Canyon. It's like the abyss. You know, you drop something in there, you ain't getting it back. It's gone forever. Even though the fall is only about maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet to the ground, you may never see it ever again. But my son is small enough that he can actually crawl under his bed and go over to the other side and get his toy and bring it out. And I knew this looking at it, that he could do that on his own. And so he brings me into his room and he's like, Dad, you know, I can't get this. I can't get this toy. And I look under the bed and I see it. I know he can go under there. And he goes, Dad, I can't do it. And I put my hand on his shoulder and I said, Son, if you go under there, I will be right here when you get back. And he looked at me, and he saw the confidence in my eyes, and he immediately went right underneath the bed, crawled over the other side, grabbed it, said, you know, in his high squeaky voice, I got it, and I grabbed his ankles, and I pulled him, you know, by his ankles out from under the bed. And you would think this kid pulled, you know, a buried treasure out of a sunken ship a mile under the surface of the ocean. I mean, he was ecstatic. Oh, Dad, I can't believe I got this character back. I got this toy. You know, I snatched it from the belly of the whale, so to speak. And I said, good, go tell your mother. But it was in that one moment that I realized if I hadn't been there, if I hadn't been able to sit with him and be there to put my hand on his shoulder and tell him, you can do this, I will be right here. You know, the thought just came into my head, like there are so many kids where the parent is just never there for that. And they're forced to figure it out on their own. And they're forced to think that there will always be a failure. And there's always going to be something out of reach. And there's never going to be someone that comes to their rescue that says, don't worry, I'm strong enough. I can help carry this burden with you. I will help you do this. And it really did hit me pretty good. I'm not saying that really convinced me to adopt. I think that there were other seeds planted before that. But it's a story that really sticks out in my head from, you know, a couple, or I would say my son was probably, yeah, four or five years old at the time. And it still sticks out in my head. I still think about that to this day because of that one brief moment where he looked at me as though, wow, okay, dad's in my corner. I can do this. You know, I can do this. And if you're someone listening and your dad wasn't in your corner, you know, I feel for you. I feel, you know, sorry that happened. But that doesn't mean that you're a failure. That doesn't mean that this is your life's definite. The definition of your life will be as such. Because there are mentors out there. There are other teachers and mentors that you could find. And ultimately, if you are becoming an adult, maybe you can become that mentor for somebody or be that parent for someone, even though you didn't have it yourself. Because now you know. I mean, from the loss of it, in a lot of ways, you understand it even better than someone who doesn't. You understand how big of an impact that can have. Whereas some people may never totally understand until much, much later in life. But you can turn around and give that to somebody else. And that's going to be a good feeling. I mean, that's going to be a great feeling to be able to do that. So that's my encouragement for new parents and for those that are thinking about becoming parents. And I got all of that simply from a movie about cavemen. I'm telling you, here right now on the Writer's Lens, it came from one movie 9 years ago with Nicolas Cage and Ryan Reynolds about how to be a good parent. I'm telling you, right here and now, that's where it came from. That's where it came from. But anyway, so I hope you enjoyed this episode. I know I didn't talk too much about The Croods, but go and watch it if you have never seen it. It's a good laugh. It's a funny movie. It's very witty, if nothing else. There was a sequel to it. It was okay. It wasn't as good as the original, but I will say that the original is very, very good. So go and check it out if you feel inclined to do so after this episode. So thanks for checking in again with me here on The Writer's Lens. Again, I'm back. I'm trying to give more episodes to you guys because I know you've been starving. I just know you've been starving. So be sure to subscribe however you're listening to this podcast. Share it with a friend. Start a conversation, especially if it's about parenting. Or maybe if you just want to talk about cavemen and parenting, go for it. So until next time, guys, stay safe out there. I'm JC Alfelto, and this is The Writer's Lens.